This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, it's, by the way, it's Friday. Senator Sanders typically is this first hour, Brunch with Bernie. He will be with us the third hour of our program today. So we're going to just start right off with Anything Goes Friday. So if there's anything on your mind, anything in particular that is concerning you, feel free to give us a shout. There's a couple of things I wanted to go through and over and, discuss with you briefly. We'll start with that. I mentioned yesterday, I promised at the end of the day, we didn't know who the Democrats were who had voted to move forward debate on fast track, basically, the TPA, which is the bill that will unconstitutionally strip Congress of its right to debate and amend the TPP. So they're going to allow debates and amendments on the TPA because it hasn't gone into effect to eliminate the possibility of debate or amendments on the TPA. So this is the Trade Promotion Authority, which is a fancy phrase for fast track. So fast track is moving forward. And I just thought I would now again, before I mention these names, I do it by virtue of maybe we can let folks know how we feel about this particular issue. This is not a how to say this. You know, I get emails from people occasionally, you know, I just saw Richard Mack on your show. I hate Richard Mack. I'm never listening to your show again. Right. I'm serious. And not just Richard Mack. I mean, you know, it could be Chris Hedges. It could be anybody. Or it could be you just said, you know, and I'm never listening again. And it's just not a good way to communicate. You know, it's like calling up one of these senators and saying, damn it, I'm never going to vote for you. You voted for the TPA. I'm really PO'd. That, you know, that's one of the least effective ways to communicate your political perspective, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. Better would be to say, you know, I am opposed to Trade Promotion Authority and to the TPP and to the deal that they're cutting with Europe. And there's a few others in the works, if the rumors I'm hearing are right. If the TPP is so good, it shouldn't need TPA. It shouldn't need Congress to tie its hands before it votes on it. As a beginning point. So please be respectful and be to the point. And you know, be relatively upbeat when you contact members of Congress. The telephone number for the switchboard in Congress is 202-225-3121 or 224-3121. We learned yesterday from Congressman Grayson. So anyhow, that said, here are the names. Senator Bennett from Colorado. These are the Democrats. Virtually all, in fact, not virtually, all of the Republicans, except for the two who didn't vote, Cassidy and Sullivan from Louisiana and Arkansas, or is that Alaska? AK, that's Alaska, right? Yeah. Those two didn't vote, and I don't know why, but they're both Republicans. They presumably would have been yes votes, but there were 13, and this is interesting, because yesterday Alan Grayson said there's 14 Democrats fixing to cross over and betray us on this thing or whatever, and it turned out it was 13. I'm wondering who didn't vote, you know, among the Democrats. You know, do they have a swing vote? But the problem is that if you add in Cassidy and Sullivan, the two Republicans who didn't vote yesterday, you end up with 67 votes in favor of fast track, which is enough to overcome even a presidential veto. Which, of course, isn't going to happen. This is something the president wants, unless something really wacky gets put in the bill, which is, you know, an opportunity right now because this bill can actually be amended and debated. So Anyhow, here's the list. Bennett from Colorado, Cantwell from Washington State, Carper from Delaware, and he's the one that Alan Grayson was calling out yesterday, Coons from Delaware, Feinstein from California, Heitkamp from North Dakota, Kane from Virginia, McCaskill from Missouri, Patty Murray from Washington State, Nelson from Florida, Shaheen from New Hampshire, Warner from Virginia, and Wyden from Oregon. Those 13 Democrats voted yes on this. Every other Democrat voted no. Well, you know, including the independent Bernie Sanders. Just FYI. The Pope has been speaking out, you will recall. And Congressman Jeff Duncan, the Republican from South Carolina, is speaking back. You know, the Pope has been talking about income inequality and global climate change, and now he's recognizing Palestine as a nation, as a state. And that was the bridge too far for Jeff Duncan. He says, it's interesting how the Vatican has gotten so political, when ultimately the Vatican ought to be working to lead people to Jesus Christ and salvation. That's what the church is supposed to do. Really? As Steve Bannon points out over at the Matto blog, just 5 months ago, Bobby Jindal was running around loose saying, leaders from the faith community need to rise up and engage America in the public square with biblical values. The time has come for pastors to lead the way and reset the course of American governance. So you got Republican Bobby Jindal, and he's certainly not alone in this. I mean, there's a whole chorus of this stuff. Of Republicans saying, oh, yeah, we want to hear from the ministers. We want to hear from the pastors. They should be providing us moral leadership on abortion. But not on richness. No, if they start talking about people being too rich, or if they start talking about climate change, or if they start talking about recognizing Palestine, no, 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 no. Faith leaders should just shut up and go away if they're liberal. Or even if some of their positions are liberal. I mean, the Catholic Church has done a lot of great stuff over the years, but they're... It's hard to describe them as a liberal organization. Although the liberation theology thing is just absolutely fascinating. But Laura Clausen over the Daily Kos added, again via Steve Bannon, Republicans have shown time and time again that they have no problem whatsoever with the religion and politics. Now we know how particular they are about whose religion and whose politics. Right. So a couple of things going on. Congress is not in session today. Everybody's back home, I think. I'm pretty sure. Is Bernie coming in from Burlington? If he's coming in from Burlington, then the Senate has I don't think they adjourn, but they, you know, is what they ever, whatever they do. And the state of Wyoming has voted to criminalize citizen science. Right? There's a lot of polluted streams, a lot of fecal coliform, a lot of, you know, nasty stuff out there, E. coli bacteria. In part because of all the factory farming. And the Western Watersheds Project has found bacteria in streams that violate clean water standards. So what did Wyoming do? They passed a law saying if you gather water or if you take pictures of polluted water, you can go to jail. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls after this. Welcome back, Jim in Los Angeles. I just clicked the button. You there, Jim? Oops.
I'm here, Tom. How you doing, my friend?
Just fine.
This is really confusing me. Why would Patty Murray vote for it?
I don't know. I mean, why would Barack Obama promote it? I don't know.
Maybe there's something we don't know, Tom.
Maria Cantwell supported it, too. I mean, you know, it's not inconceivable that there's some good things in this trade deal. In fact, I'm quite sure that there are. But that doesn't mean that it's a good deal. And the fact that it was negotiated by corporate lawyers in secret and to this day is still secret says to me that this is not the time to tie Congress's hands.
Agreed. But going on, my other main gig is world peace through music, rhythm, and harmony. And I guess I'm going to go try to get an audience with the Pope and tell him that all Americans should vote against Republicans. Republicans are for war, for profit.
Yeah, I think Americans are starting to figure that out. It's really interesting when Rand Paul and Hillary Clinton are both pulling 45% in Kentucky. I think people are starting to figure that out. Jim, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Tracy watching Free Speech TV in Las Vegas. Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How about you?
I am peachy and blessed. Thank you.
Great.
I called our senators, Senator Dean Howard, and to tell him I was not pleased. And I asked the person, the guy came on the phone, I said, how does he feel about this? How does Senator Heller feel? He supports it.
Oh, jeez.
And, yeah. And then I said, well, I am against it because the first thing is because I can't go up there and look at it because if I do, you know, it's secret. I mean, I can't look at it. And I just, you know, I just doesn't sound, you know, it doesn't pass the smell test.
Right.
And he goes, I'll tell Senator Keller how you feel. Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's typically how they go. It's funny, over at the Obamatrade.com website, which is a conservative website opposed to this TPP trade deal, they've got a picture of President Obama in the upper right-hand corner with a little thought balloon that says, if you like your job, you can keep it, you know, which is, you know, for conservatives who think that he lied about Obamacare, you know, if you like your insurance, you can keep it thing, you know, it's amazing. It's just amazing. If this thing were put up for a referendum in the United States, it would be overwhelmingly defeated. You know, people on the right, people on the left, I'm hearing nobody passionately in favor of it, other than one lawyer who called me 2 days ago and said he makes a living as an international trade lawyer. Okay, well, you know, got a dog in the fight, I think. But
yeah, and I think maybe he thought maybe I was, you know, one of these rich people, you know, that live in Summerlin, or, you know, or a friend of our, you know, of all the, I can't think of his name right now. You know, that I was one of these rich people.
Yeah.
You
know? There you go. Tracy, got to run. Thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Friday, Senator Sanders will be with us in the third hour of our program, about an hour and 40 minutes from now. And Marcia in Englewood, Florida, or is it Marcia? It's Marcia?
Marcia. Yeah,
hey.
How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I'm so terribly confused because I listened to Wyden, who I used to think was a diehard progressive, and yet he's going so gung-ho, and all the issues that he proclaimed that we should have nothing to worry about because, number one, NAFTA is going to be history. This new trade deal is going to totally wipe out everything that was in NAFTA that caused us to lose our jobs. And
I don't think so.
The other thing we don't have to worry about is that it's not going to be cast in stone until the entire agreement is published to the American people but not until after all the amendments are made by the people in Congress. And I'm wondering, he doesn't say anything, are the people, once they can read it, going to be able to make any voice about changes to it that they're displeased with?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, if they pass the Trade Protection or Trade Promotion Authority, the TPA, the fast track, if they pass that, which is what was voted on yesterday, it hasn't passed. It's just moved on to debate and amendments. But if they pass that, then they won't be able to debate or amend TPP. So, you know, I mean, that's the whole point of passing the TPA, is it ties Congress's hands so that it takes just a simple majority. It can't be filibustered. It gets, you know, so the TPP essentially will get passed because there's enough Republicans in favor of it. They don't need any Democrats. But they need Democrats in order to get this TP, this fast track passed, so that they can then shove through TPP. So the Democrats will be able to vote for the Trade Promotion Authority and then vote against the trade, the TPP, and go home and say, I voted against the TPP. What are you talking about? But no, you facilitated it. Am I making sense, Marcia? Maybe not. Yeah, okay.
I wish.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like any of this. I contacted my senator yesterday, Nelson.
Yeah.
And I told his staff I didn't like it. I didn't like it. And then I go see Nelson praising it.
Yeah.
On C-SPAN. So, you know, I'm totally disgusted.
Yeah, Nelson's one of the guys who voted to move forward the debate yesterday. Marcia, thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Larry, listening on Sirius in Covington, Georgia. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thank you for what you do. You do a wonderful job. You got wonderful people on that help us out, especially Senator Bernie Sanders.
Thank you, Larry.
And if I would just think, sir, if you could mention to him today, until we get this Citizens United overturned or whatever we're going to do with it, since corporations are people, why don't they pay their taxes like all the other people do?
Yeah, because they've been successful in buying politicians who have been writing tax loopholes into our tax code for decades. I mean, but yeah, I get your question. You know, I get the irony of your question.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant analysis and an analogy. But, you know, it's but I'm not going to the reason why I'm not going to mention it to Bernie, Larry, is that I try not to bring questions to Bernie. I try to be to let my callers do so. And but for two reasons. One, I really want it to be Bernie and the callers. And secondly, on the couple of occasions that I have asked him questions, I suddenly get overwhelmed by people saying, hey, would you ask this? Would you ask that? And so I'm taking myself out of that equation. But you know, it's I get your question, and it's a good one. Thank you, Larry, for the call. Paul in Noonan, Georgia. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Tom, thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned about Shell's drilling in the Arctic.
Uh-huh.
And I would like for you to use your very influential pulpit to appeal to some of our billionaires that are not psychopaths, such as Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, Oprah Winfrey, to see if they couldn't use some of their financial clout to counteract the psychopaths who have bought the prostitutes that parade themselves as our congressmen. I mean, this has to be stopped. They're destroying the earth. They're destroying the very world that gives us life and sustenance. It makes absolutely no sense. And since we do have some billionaires out there who are not psychopaths, who appear to be decent people, why can't they use their confluence to help persuade the public and buy the... Why can't they pay more than the lobbyists are paying our congressmen since they have prostituted themselves?
Yeah. Well, Paul, to the extent that this program can lobby those folks, you just did it. I mean, you just said what you said, and you know, it's something I wouldn't disagree with. I have no inside lines to any of those folks, and I doubt that any of them are listening to talk radio. But you never know. You never know. And I'm with you, Paul. That and thank you for the call. That allowing drilling in the Arctic is beyond beyond reckless. I think it's dangerous. I think it's something that has so much potential, so much downside potential, and there's no upside potential. We don't need fossil fuels anymore. We have alternative technologies. We need to stop subsidizing fossil fuels.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Anything Goes Friday. Back with your calls after this. Bernie will be with us at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, an hour and a half from now. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Exposing the con and conservative. Saddlewood in our chat room says, I can't understand why you're so mystified. The reason that Obama and the corporate Democrats are supporting TPP is because the corporate security industrial complex will digitally, if not physically, ruin them if they don't. I don't know. It would be interesting to analyze those 13 Democrats. You know, I don't know if all of them are running for re-election. I don't know if who is and who isn't. I don't know if they have serious challenges from the left or from the right. I don't know what the common denominator is. But there is one. I guarantee you there's one. And it probably has to do with, well, I mean, Dianne Feinstein in California, for example. The movie companies, which are, I mean, it's huge money in California, are all in favor of the TPP because it's going to make it, you know, it's going to make it harder. It's going to make it easier to prosecute bootleg versions of intellectual properties, and it's going to extend intellectual property protections and do so not only in the United States but in other countries as well. And so, you know, they're in favor of it, and that might be a good thing. It might not be. I think copyrights last way too long. I think patents last way too long. I think that they suppress innovation. I'm with Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin on that, but, you know, so anyway. Okay, here's just a little funny for you, and then I'm going to pick up your phone calls. This is what Bernie said on Sunday on Meet the Press, or Face the Nation, wasn't it, with Bob Schieffer? I think so. Yeah, here he is. Here's Senator Sanders.
If elected president, I will have a litmus test in terms of my nominee to be a Supreme Court justice. And that nominee will say that we are going to overturn this disastrous Supreme Court decision on Citizens United.
So that was followed. That was last Sunday. This Thursday, yesterday afternoon, apparently Hillary was with a group of fundraisers yesterday. And here, this is from Mattia Gold and Ann Gernon in the Washington Post for the Post Politics column. The headline, Hillary Clinton's litmus test for Supreme Court nominees, a pledge to overturn Citizens United. And the first paragraph, which is also the first sentence, reads, Hillary Clinton told a group of her top fundraisers Thursday that if she's elected president, her nominees to the Supreme Court will have to share her belief that the court's 2010 Citizens United decision must be overturned, according to people who heard her remarks. Which provoked Andy Borowitz over at TheNewYorker.com to write, Democratic presidential candidate, keep in mind, tongue-in-cheek, Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton is on pace to adopt rival Bernie Sanders' positions on all major issues by noon on Thursday, Clinton campaign officials have confirmed. Within minutes of Sanders' entry into the Democratic race, Clinton released position papers on trade, income inequality, national defense, and the environment that meticulously copied the Vermont senator's views on those matters. Awakening at 8 a.m., Sanders, who had been planning to run to the left of Clinton in 2016, discovered that while he was sleeping, she had already begun running slightly to the left of him. In an online video posted Thursday morning, Clinton welcomed Sanders to the race, adding, to those who agree with Bernie Sanders on the issues, let me say this. I am Bernie Sanders. Sanders, who had scheduled a speech in Vermont for 11 a.m. on Thursday, canceled it abruptly, saying, Hillary already said everything I said I was going to say an hour ago. The Vermont politician told reporters he was unsure whether he would even continue with his campaign. I don't know anymore, he said, visibly shaken. I just don't know. Well, tongue in cheek. Bernie is in the race. He's going to stay in the race. But it's interesting to see, you know, how these things happen. And I don't know if Hillary Clinton would have taken this position without Bernie Clinton or not. I can tell you that's not why Bernie's in the race. He's not in the race to move anybody anyway. He's in the race to build a national movement for progressive politics in the United States. That may or may not put him into the White House, and I'm totally with him on that. Diana in Agoura Hills, California. Hey, Diana.
Hey, Tom. It's always a privilege to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I wanted to reassure your viewers, because I've been watching these last couple of weeks, and everyone seems to have so much anxiety about Bernie using this word socialism. Mm-hmm. So I want to reassure them that all the young people that I come in contact with, I've been teaching college for 26 years, they're very comfortable with Scandinavian socialism. They want to see more socialism in this country. They're not frightened of that word. Yeah. Moreover, we're getting a lot of vets in these colleges, returning vets from, you know, the Iraq war and so forth. And they're fed up with the status quo. And they understand that Bernie has really been active in supporting them in their issues. So I hope Bernie makes a whole series of college appearances, talking to the students about their education, their situation with student loans, their potential for free college education, really just changing the shaking up the system and making it a more just situation for them to get their college education, even up through and including graduate level. They understand that the status quo won't serve them in any way. They're also thinking that Hillary Clinton has nothing to offer them. So I'm just hoping to see Bernie out there doing a lot of college appearances. I know everyone thinks that California is in the bag for Hillary, but let me tell you, college students are not going to be easy or fall in line easily along the Democratic road of tradition and status quo.
Right.
They're pretty much fed up.
Well, and they're young enough, they don't even remember when her husband was president. I mean, or if they do remember it, it's as, you know, the recollections of a 5 or 10 year old, right?
Well, the economy, when it fell apart, affected their families. They were young enough to feel it.
Yes.
And not understand it. And then when they realized that Bill Clinton was in office, and then George Bush, following on after that, created this, you know, financial pressure on their families, they understand that neither party offers them anything unless you get somebody that's talking, you know, in revolutionary terms, and socialist is not a word they're afraid of.
Yeah, and talking straight. And you know, revolutionary in terms of like the Reagan Revolution and the FDR Revolution. Yes, agreed. Diana, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your insight into how your students are reacting. That's fascinating. Ed in Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, Ed, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey.
Well, in answer to your question from the last hour about how we can talk to the Republicans, the bottom tier of the three-pronged Republican Party, instead of calling them youthful idiots or something like that, which is obviously just going to alienate them, just put everybody in the same basket. We're all useful idiots. And use maybe Edward Bernays' vernacular when he was talking about conditioned response, and say, we've been conditioned to expect, and then yada, 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 you know, go on with your point. So that we're not separating us and them, but saying, yeah, we've all been conditioned to believe a certain thing, but this is why we've been conditioned, and it's contrary to the facts.
Right.
That
yeah.
might be a more useful way of doing it.
Okay. Let me play with that, Ed. That's a interesting suggestion. Thank you for that. Camille in Tunisia. Oh, hey.
Hi, Tom.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, listen, I wanted to mention something that I hadn't heard anybody bring up, except maybe in passing at the beginning of the week. And that is about the European Union's tentative decision to use military force to stop the migrants coming from North Africa into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a terrible idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that much about it. Were they suggesting using military force off the coast of North Africa to stop people from leaving?
Essentially, yes, to intercept the boats that are bringing the migrants who are fleeing all kinds of chaos
right.
to Europe. My, you know, I get I get the part where, you know, too many migrants are really going to start to bring down even the European economy, but I'm not sure that military force is the answer to that problem.
Yeah, yeah, it seems.
And I'm not sure that it's not going to make a bad problem worse.
My understanding is that the vast majority of this is being handled by people smuggling rings that are kind of little mini mafias. Is that right?
Well, yes, and they're making a boatload of money.
Right.
Right. They charge up to, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 per person to take folks from, and what's kind of really sad is that people are willing to pay that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
To get out of the situation that they're in.
Yeah, it's truly tragic.
If they're that desperate, do they honestly think that, you know, military force is the answer to the problem?
Yeah, it's almost a classic example of Abe Maslow's old comment from 1971 of, you know, when the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
Yes. And I think everything is becoming so militarized, and that's what, you know, that's the first solution people are looking to.
What would be your alternative?
Well, you know, I would try very hard to, you know, I would try very hard to nip the problem
You mean stop the civil wars?
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
That would be a very good idea, because most of these people are not looking for a better job. They're literally running for their lives. Camille, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to us there in Tunisia. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour. Anything goes Friday, and Bernie will be with us in the third hour of our program today. Welcome back. Coach Glenn in State College, Pennsylvania, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Glenn, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, they started talking about a Tuesday, and Wednesday they passed the Pennsylvania pension reform bill to avoid a $51 billion future shortfall. And what it did was increase employee contributions for state workers and public school employees hired after January, and it changed the plan from a pension into a 401k, which
is
pretty weak. They also slid little sections in there where a municipality won't have to pay more than their 20% of their budget towards pensions. So that's another get-out-of-jail card they have for the future. And it happened because, just as the Congress does with Social Security, they borrowed from the funds and unfunded them. They didn't fund those pension funds.
Right.
So, of course, they're short. They spent those were deferred wages for those employees, and they've stolen it from them.
Right. Plus, a lot of these pension funds still have not recovered from the big crash of 2007, 2008.
Yes, that too. But the Republican governor says he wants to privatize the state liquor stores, which will give some money to his buddies. And the Democrats want a tax on all this natural gas extraction that's happening in the shale regions of Pennsylvania. It's just, and both sides are blaming the other, of course, and the people suffer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Oh. It's absolutely amazing.
And I hear they're doing it in other states, too. It's just bit by bit. They're taking these little bits away.
Count on it. Oh, this has been going on since the 80s. I mean, this, you know, pension stripping, it used to be illegal. And I don't know when they changed the rules. It seems like it was in the 80s. But the rules got changed, and now pension stripping is going on all over the place, even in governments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By slipping that clause in with 20% maximum when they know they're going to have a 51% shortfall, that also guarantees they're going to have to not pay for those pensions in the future.
Which means they continue to defund them, which means they will come back and take another bite at that apple. Glenn, thanks for the call. Charles in Johnson City, Tennessee. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Oh, having a good day. How about you?
Good. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
It's the thing to watch. I wanted to give a quote from John Stepling, and it was on ideology. And he says, ideologies are essentially a false consciousness. And I believe that may be one of the truest sentences I have ever read in my life. And it doesn't matter if it's capitalism, communism, fascism, it will not get you to consciousness. And I think on a finite planet, that's what we need to survive. We need not to something to control, out-of-control technology. And the humanities are being crushed in universities. There's only a fraction of people coming out with an education in humanities. And this, since the ancient Greeks, has always been the check and balance on technology to question this. And people are going to have to learn and not be taken in by everything. I'm not surprised at Barack Obama. I've always been a Democrat. I was raised a Democrat, but I did not vote for him either time.
Yikes.
This guy's bought and sold.
Yeah. Well, I voted for him both times, and I think he's done some good stuff. I just strongly disagree with him on this trade thing. Charles, thanks for the call. Very thoughtful analysis. We'll be right back. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Carol in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. What's up, Carol?
Oh, hey, Tom. First off, I want to agree with Ed, and I'm thinking like something like retro Republicans, because the Republican Party years and years ago under Eisenhower, I might have voted for somebody there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I called about is the Jeb Bush, and I've been watching this with a great deal of interest, Jeb Bush and his support of the war and all of the backpedaling and everything else. Not one. I mean, these are news people who are interviewing him or so-called journalists that are interviewing him.
Right.
Not one of them mentions the fact that Jeb Bush was the one of the top signers of the Project for the New American Century, which was the blueprint for splitting the Mideast and taking all their oil.
Right, and the PNAC crowd sent a letter in 1998 to President Clinton saying, please invade Iraq right now. And I used to think George Bush signed it. I was told last night that he didn't. I'm not sure. We're trying to track it down, but still, our Jeb Bush side or other, but still, Jeb was the co-creator. He was one of the founders of PNAC. You're right.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
I actually remember looking at it and looking at the signers, and I would, unless my memory has totally failed me, I would bet that he was on the document that when you could go out and find the Project for a New American Century on the internet.
Right. I thought so too, but you know, whether he was or not, he helped create PNAC. But to your question, why is it that no reporter has asked him this? It's because our reporters are no longer reporters. They are agents of infotainment. Their job is to get ratings for their network. If a reporter asks a really painful or embarrassing question of a presidential candidate or any politician, frankly, that politician will blackball that reporter and may blackball the entire network. And if they do that, there are career consequences, there are financial consequences, there's business consequences. And that's why, you know, for example, 2 weeks ago, when Chuck Todd had John Boehner on, and John Boehner issued a series of lies about Obamacare, that Chuck Todd's response was, oh, so you don't like Obamacare, you don't think it's good for the country. I mean, you know, rather than, sir, you just lied three times in a row. Everything you said is wrong.
Why do they not? I guess my follow-up question is, if that's what happens, why don't they report that? We had so-and-so on. We asked him hard questions. He refused to answer those hard questions. Now he will not come back on our network again.
Because the talent on these networks would like...
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, Carol. And I believe the answer is very simple. The talent on these networks would like to preserve two things that are very important to them. One is insider status in Washington, D.C., getting invited to the right parties, knowing the right people. And two is a paycheck that runs anywhere from $2 or $3 million a year up to $10 or $15 million a year. I mean, they're very well paid. And they don't want to blow that. And if they take on somebody like John Boehner, they will blow that. That'll be the end of their career. I mean, look what happened to Helen Thomas when she who had always been sat in the front row of the White House correspondence thing since the Eisenhower administration. And she asked George Bush a question that embarrassed him and made him uncomfortable. And she got sent to the back of the room. And a week later, her news agency fired her. And, oh, here's Chuck Todd telling the truth, as a matter of fact. Here, Chuck Todd will explain this to you, Carol. Here he is.
I don't know how you do it. I'd be barking at them. You just sit there and go, and you sit
there.
You
know, we all sit there because we all know the first time we bark, it's the last time we do the show.
Yeah.
There's something sometimes where it's the last time you're ever, all of a sudden, nobody will come on your show, right? Yeah. There is that balance sometimes.
See, there's Chuck Todd explaining it. Carol, I got to move along, but thank you for the call, and you're spot on. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's up?
Tom, I wanted to talk about Michelle Obama's speak at the Tuskegee Institute over the weekend. It was really interesting, a chain of events. I had heard about the speech Monday morning, and I happened to be staying in a hotel, or was at the time, and I left for work that morning and got on the elevator. And, you know, Fox went crazy about how she was race baiting and so forth and so on. So I get on the elevator, and this is predominantly white area where I'm at. And I'm dressed for work. I'm in a suit and tie. I get on the elevator, and there's two or three elderly white people on the elevator. And the first thing one of them says to me, she says, "Oh, I know you played basketball, number one." So I said, "Well, that's interesting." So I get downstairs, I walk to my car, and then there's another couple. They're getting in their car, and she sees me, and all of a sudden she grabs her purse a little tighter and moves it to the next arm. I get in my car, I go away. 2 hours later, I had to go to the AAA office to get registration renewed, and on the way into the office, apparently they were really crowded in an office, so they were calling people in that had appointments, and there's a little boy outside playing with football, and I start tossing the football to him, and eventually my time came. The lady came out, called me in, and when she looked at me, I guess she thought the kid was my kid, and she says, "Oh," she said to someone inside, "there's two of them out here." And I said, "Well, two what?" She said, "Oh, I meant two people." So then after that, my day is
the kid
over.
Was black?
I come home and she's white.
Okay, go ahead.
And then, so I come home and I turn on Fox News. Well, Fox is putting these Hattiesburg suspects, these people that shot these cops, they're flashing their pictures all over the place, these four black people.
Right.
Then after that, they did a spot on ISIS and some more brown people. And then they did a piece on Shaquille O'Neal and bubble wrap. So this is what I wanted to say to you. This was the day in the life of a black man. So for any of your white listeners out there that believe that somehow this is a figment of our black imagination, I say to you something that I can't say on the air.
Mm.
This is for real.
Yeah.
These slights are slights that people that are non-black, I'm not talking about racism in general. There is a certain, I call it blackism, there is a certain vehement type of racism that is directed towards black people in this country. And for some reason, white people will not deal with it. By the way, let me just finish with this, Tom. So at the end of that day, guess what I found out? There was a lynching in Greensboro, Georgia, of a black man found hanging from a tree in a backyard, and almost no press in the national media.
Yeah.
I just wanted to lay that on you.
Yeah. Well, Kenyatta, thank you for keeping it real for us, for sharing your story with us, and hopefully many of our white listeners got an aha out of that. I appreciate it. It's always good to hear from you, sir. We'll be back. It is just a few minutes before the top of the hour. After the news, we'll continue with Anything Goes Friday. And just a reminder, Bernie will be with us in the third hour of our program. So he'll be here an hour and 5 minutes from now. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Well, now we know. We don't need Medicare. We don't need Medicaid. We don't need Obamacare. We don't need the Affordable Care Act. We don't need even health insurance companies, because Jeb Bush says that the Apple Watch is going to take care of us. I'm serious. He said, "I think we should repeal Obamacare." And then he pointed to his Apple Watch. He said, "On this device in 5 years will be applications that will allow me to manage my health care in ways that 5 years ago were not even possible." And he talked about how he's got type 2 diabetes. And he said, it'll let me know if I eat too many ice cream sundaes or butterscotch sundaes or whatever. Yeah, butterscotch sundaes. Really? These guys are getting desperate, you know? Yeah, let's repeal Obamacare because Apple came out with a nice product. It's I wish they would just go back to being relatively honest. You know, Ronald Reagan did a back in 1964, I think it was, did a 33 LP, you know, a half hour speech basically, talking about how someday, and we used to have a clip from it, someday we will look back on this moment in time and say, that's when we began going down the road of the to socialism, to communism. You know, this is the turning point. Medicare, right? The whole thing was to get people to vote against Medicare. You got it? Here. This is President Ronald Reagan.
My name is Ronald Reagan. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. The doctor begins to lose freedoms. It's like telling a lie, and one leads to another. Uh-oh. When a doctor decides he wants to practice in one town, and the government has to say to him, you can't live in that town, they already have enough doctors, you have to go someplace else. All of us can see what happens once you establish the precedent that the government can determine a man's working place and his working methods, and behind it will come other federal programs that will invade every area of freedom as we have known it in this country. Until one day we will awake to find that we have socialism.
Wow. Did we insert that music? Or was that music on the original recording? Oh, Jacob might have done that. Amazing. So, it just, you know, what can you say? I mean, this is it doesn't get better than that. Butch in Levittown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Butch, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Butch.
How you doing?
Good.
You had mentioned one time, yes. Hello?
Yeah. No, I said, I'm doing fine. What's on your mind?
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm a rigger. I do machinery mover. I've been helping them vulture capitalists load machinery into other containers around the world. And basically to get to the point, NAFTA, CAFTA, WTO. You had mentioned some one time before that I think even George Bush could have opted out of the NAFTA or something like that because he opted out of a war.
Opted out of I think it was the ABM treaty. It was some sort of missile treaty with Russia, as I recall.
Right. With that, if we elect Bernie Sanders, couldn't he opt out of GATT, WTO, NAFTA, CAFTA, and all these TPPs and all that stuff?
I don't know. I don't know if the president has the power to do that. I think that once Congress votes on them and he signs it, they become the law of the land.
If any of the callers behind me want to ask that question to Bernie as well, if they get a chance, because I'm not able to
sure.
I'm still working right now, but I wanted to get that out there.
Okay, yeah, Bernie will be here an hour from now, and it's a great question for somebody to ask him. Thanks, Butch. Joseph in South Pasadena, California. Hey, Joseph, what's up?
Oh, hey, Mr. Hartman.
Yes, sir.
This is the first time I've ever contacted you in the number of years I've listened to your program, bits and pieces in car and iPhone and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I like your program, and you're spot on most of everything you talk about. Now, specifically, today in the International Business Times, written by Avinash Pandey, he has an article about Antarctica's ice shelf, the Larsen B, two-thirds of it is splitting apart.
Right.
It is NASA JPL scientist Ella Kazandar, who you should have on your program probably. He says in the article that 18% a year is cleaving over 18 years, which is 1% a year of that ice is melting.
Right.
Under Operation Ice Bridge, which is a NASA program, they predict that 625 square miles and iceberg that is 1,640 feet thick, the Flask Glacier, will melt and break up into the shipping lanes. Between 2002 and 2012, the acceleration pace of the melt is 36%. Now, for your watchers that don't know much about global warming, in fact, I reference them to the studies based by University of California, Irvine, under about 30 years ago, by Sherwood and Rowland. Look at their predictions back then of what would happen at today. And everything they predicted then is beginning to take place and is taking place right now before our
right. Yeah, the Larsen shelf had three parts, A, B, and C. A disintegrated first, B disintegrated second. It's still in the process of finally disintegrating. And C is now thinning both above and below at rates that are what they were predicting to be happening 20, 30 years out. It looks like it might have passed a tipping point. None of these in and of themselves are going to raise sea ocean levels because they are all ice shelves already sitting on the water. However, they act like the cork in a bottle that holds back these giant flows of ice that are on land, the glaciers.
Yeah.
And when these ice shelves go, that'll allow those glaciers to start sliding off the Antarctic continent into the sea, and then you're going to start seeing substantial sea level rises. And that's a problem. That's a real problem for every coastal city in the world, including those in the United States. Joseph, thanks for the call, and thanks for pointing it out. Bill in Dayton, Ohio. Hey, Bill.
Good morning.
You have a theory on why Democrats are supporting the TPP, or at least these 13?
Well, I picked up, I called my guys yesterday, and Sharon Brown, I knew, wouldn't change his mind. He's a diehard fighter here in Dayton, Ohio. My thought was, immediately, all the states are border states on the country. So
not Colorado.
One.
And not North Dakota.
I was going.
And not Missouri.
I was going Delaware, Florida, we did California, Oregon, and Washington.
Yeah.
And whoever business guy got the Republicans to get these Democrats to come along shows that one person thinking that he can just have a dinner and threaten government officials. No.
Oh, I don't think it was anything that coarse. I think I suspect one of two things happened. Either, and perhaps both at the same time. Either the lobbyists got in and said, you know, you really want to do this and we want to make a big campaign contribution or whatever. You know, in other words, these 13 Democrats all were lobbied to the point where they thought, okay, this is in my best interest or in the best interest of my state. Or the president called them up and said, and he would have had to go around Harry Reid to do this, because typically Harry Reid is the passer out of goodies to senators, but Harry Reid is opposed to this trade deal. So perhaps the president called up and said, hey, I know that so-and-so is important to your state. I'll make sure that you get that if you go with me on this, and just offered something to each one of them that presidents can do. I don't know what those things might be, but it seems like those are the two most logical routes to getting a member of Congress to vote against the wishes of the majority of their citizens. And it may be that these folks are not voting against the wishes of the majority of their citizens. I mean, I haven't seen the polling on that, but I believe so. I believe it to be the case, certainly based on the calls for this show, although my position has been anti-so-called free trade from day one. Bill, thanks for the call. Interesting thought. We will be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And you can drop into our free live chat room at TomHartman.com and say hi to some of the finest minds on earth. And welcome back. Just checking out the chat room here. In the 50s, working people were, this is Glenn Synapse, were united by World War I teamwork when everyone else knew inherently they all benefited from the least of these benefiting. There were many steel and auto worker strikes. They had real power to keep the benefits of their labor. Yeah, right on, Glenn. Paul, watching Free Speech TV in South Lyon, Michigan. Hey, Paul, you are pro-TPP?
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Have you read it?
Yeah, I'm glad reasonable Democrats prevailed over the fear-mongering some are doing about on TPP.
Have you read
it? For example. No.
Why do you support it?
It's not done yet. It's not done yet. It's still being negotiated, which is why it's secret. All international negotiations are secret. I mean, that's just common sense. So this claim that they're keeping it secret is just
if it's so good, Paul. If it's so good, why should Congress tie their hands on their ability to debate it or amend it?
Because, all presidents have had that authority in the last 50 years, number one, and it's the only way any trade agreement can get through. Otherwise, someone will amended to death. I mean, you know how Congress works.
Yeah, so. I'm all in favor of amending it to death.
People who want to increase our exports are not. So, you know, what's wrong with increasing our exports? That's what TPP will do, create jobs by increasing
exports. The people who want to increase our exports are the people who work in the industries that export. That would be the unions, and they're all opposed to this. The people who are supporting this are people who want to increase our imports. We had a $51 billion trade deficit last month. That's you know, 10,000 jobs per billion. That's 51,000 jobs that we lost last month as a result of our trade policies.
That's not true, because if you spend $10 at the dollar store, yes, you spent $10, and that would be a deficit. But you also got $20 worth of stuff, useful things. So
you're
only looking at one side of the equation, so that's not true.
Paul, you're missing the biggest piece of spending that $10 at the dollar store, and that is that you know, a good chunk of that $10 is going straight to China, whereas it used to be that a good chunk of that $10 would go to workers in Connecticut or in Georgia or wherever the stuff used to be made in the United States, and it would continue to cycle through the American economy over and over and over again. Now it all ends up in China, and that's why 1/7 of America, of all assets in the United States, are now foreign-owned, and that definitely was not the case before we started this free trade insanity.
Yeah, but we've got an awful lot of cheap goods that saved us a whole lot of money and created a whole lot of jobs. The amount we're losing in trade deficit is like one or two, some petty amount.
Paul, I would be pleased to pay more for my goods if everybody's paychecks were larger.
Well, so would I. So would I. But
so then oppose these trade deals.
We already have zero tariffs, and that's not going to change as long as the Republicans are controlling Congress. So the president's trying to make the best of that bad situation by increasing our exports.
I don't believe it.
Congress is not going to pass tariffs like
that. There are 29 provisions in this thing. Only 5 of them have to do with trade. The rest have to do with deregulating banksters, with making Sony more money, a Japanese corporation, by the way. The big lobbying is coming out from the big corporations, Paul. You know this.
Well, there's one of the other scare tactics you touched on, that the foreign governments will be able to sue our government and change our laws.
No, foreign corporations will be.
Jade Helm is a TPP conspiracy.
I read yesterday 10 examples of foreign corporations suing the United States under NAFTA and under CAFTA. It is already going on. As we speak, Uruguay and Australia are being sued by Philip Morris under these kind of agreements, under the GATT. Paul, respectfully, I disagree. Thank you for the call. 20 minutes past the hour, anything goes Friday. Bernie will be with us in 40 minutes from now. Robert in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind today?
Oh, good morning, Professor Hartman. I just had a quick couple things here. As far as any churches of any kind, I don't really believe that any church leader or pastor or anybody should step up and make any kind of a political decision, because that would influence their people. I believe that churches, that everything like that, pastors, they're supposed to lead their flock with spiritual ideals.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's up to us, all of us, churchgoers, all of us, as free Americans, to do our homework. And one more thing, with Bernie Sanders, the senator of Vermont, running for president, is probably one of the greatest things in a long time.
I agree.
And I believe that Americans have to do their homework with him, mm-hmm. and let's get rid of this Senate and Congress that is trying to destroy America.
Well, I don't, you know, that's hyperbolic, Robert. They're not trying to destroy America. They're just trying to make more money for the big transnational corporations. I mean, you know, and some of them think that that's a good thing. You know, the old saying, what's good for General Motors is good for America. Well, now General Motors isn't the largest employer. We used to have, in today's dollars, $50 an hour jobs at GM, or $40 an hour jobs anyway. And now, instead, we've got $9 an hour jobs at Walmart. The largest employer in the United States is no longer GM. It's now Walmart. So now it's what's good for Walmart is good for America. And what's good for Walmart is more cheap junk from Asia. And that's not good for America, though. I think we can clearly demonstrate that. So, Robert, thank you for the call. Lucy in Roseville, Michigan. Hey, Lucy, the Pope?
Yes, Tom. Hi. I'd like to say the Pope should remind the Republicans that years and years ago it was declared under the Constitution something about we the people, for Christ's sake, you know. He should remind our government that the people are the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. Lucy, thank you for the call. Let's see here. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Well, the farce is with us, and the farce is strong, Tom.
Yeah, and Mercury retrograde is coming.
Oh, God. Yeah. Anyway, before I get into Senator Bennett, I just want to mention, regarding the Republican followers, one of the key rules is always don't attack the person, attack something impersonal they can separate from. So the idea, so show that they've been misled. So perhaps we could even call them the misled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Because you create a reaction when you attack them.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bernie's going to win in a landslide. I feel very comfortable with that, but he needs support. And right now in Colorado, we've got a senator who's really a dino con.
You're talking about Bennett?
Senator Bennett.
Yeah.
He was appointed in a rather farcical manner by the governor when Salazar got pulled into Obama's cabinet.
Right.
But anyway... he voted for Keystone XL and to override the veto. On Iran, he's pretty bad. And now, many, many other things for a long time. And he should be a Republican, not a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
And now with this TPA thing, he was one of the 13 who voted for TPA. Anyway, right. I'm hoping he's going to be primaried. And I've been really trying to think, who can do that? Well, we used to have a fantastic group of reps here in Colorado, young senators, with Tim Wirth, Gary Hart, and Pat Schroeder. I mean, it was on and on. We almost had a dream team.
Mm-hmm.
But we have one congressperson who's followed that legacy, the one who replaced Pat Schroeder, and that's Diana DeGette. And it's really a problem for me because I never get to complain. She's my congressperson, and she's always her votes are almost always right on.
Wow.
And so I'm calling right now. I'm calling for her to primary. I mean, well, in the House, she doesn't have much of a voice. She has great votes, but... she would be a great voice in the Senate. I mean, she would be a great support for Bernie. So
yeah.
I'm calling her out today and saying, please, Diana, run for senator. You'd be a great senator, and give her you a much greater voice.
Is Bennett up for re-election next year?
Yes. Yes, he is. And he has to be primary because he is not a Democrat.
That's very interesting.
I think he should change parties just like Ben Nighthorse Campbell did. He was a senator who had been a Democrat and became Republican.
Right.
Well, it would be nice if Bennett would do that before the election, but I hope that Diana DeGette will primary him.
Yeah, or do
she's thinking about it.
Go ahead.
Anyway, I don't know if she's thinking about it, but she would make a great senator.
Know that she's actually contemplating a primary? I mean, rare, isn't it? I mean, if she primaries him and loses, mm-hmm. isn't she pretty much just toast in Democratic Party circles in Colorado? Isn't that the end of her career?
Perhaps, but also so what? But if you saw the corruption of the Democratic Party here, like the way Salazar became senator and so forth, they don't like changes here.
That was my point.
You know,
the system doesn't like to be challenged. I mean, that's just human nature, I suppose.
But we're always calling to challenge it, and it's really time to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we in 2004 and so forth, there were a lot of new blood came in. People who really want to do things, and they've all been burned out. I mean, we worked hard. I helped write as one of the principal authors of the 2006 platform for the Democrats, and it all got ignored.
Right.
And so the thing, and if you saw, like, Mike Miles, who ran for Senate against Salazar, he was just kicking Salazar's butt.
Yeah.
But there is conspiracy. I mean, we actually have letters from one of the newspapers that's saying, hey, we're basically going to ignore Miles and favor Salazar. And there's even questions of whether Salazar even got enough votes to be on the ballot.
Wow.
At the convention. I mean, we're not sure. I'm not making allegations, but there are a lot of strange things that went on. Which brings up also, I would urge that everybody donate to candidates directly, not to the DSCC or the DCCC, the Democratic Center.
Because the parties are not, now that they're no longer run by Howard Dean, or at least the National Party, mm-hmm. is not always making the best decisions, is that?
Well, yeah, well, like in case Mike Miles run against Salazar, before the primary, when Mike Miles got more votes than Salazar as a top ballot, the DSCC called me up and said, hey, will you support the Democratic candidate, Salazar? They didn't even mention Mike Miles.
Wow.
They had already made their decisions.
Wow.
They undermined Andrew Romanoff, who ran against Bennett last time.
Yeah.
so the National Party is running, the national organizations are running against any change.
Right.
And we desperately need change to support Bernie.
Amen. Jeff, thank you for the call. 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's Anything Goes Friday, and in a half hour, Senator Sanders will be with us for Brunch with Bernie. Before the hour, the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. Brunch with Bernie will be with us. Senator Sanders will be with us almost exactly 30 minutes from now. Our Brunch with Bernie hour has been moved to the third hour of the program today instead of the first. Donald in Chicago. Hey, Donald, what's up?
Yes, hi, Tom. How you doing? You know, I was wondering, I have a question. You know, this business of waiting to vote them out is a bunch of nonsense. It takes too long to get these people out by the time their elections run and they have a chance of getting back in because everybody forgets what they do.
Yep.
But is there a way that the American people could have the ability to insist that a person steps down? Because these people, when they leave office, nothing happens to them. They're held unaccountable for anything they do. Like President Clinton, who I voted for, he kind of set the ball rolling on the mess that we have today. But you know something? He should have paid for it. And that goes for the wars, that goes for the shutdowns and everything else that they do to us. Nobody pays up.
Respectfully, Donald, I put the responsibility for that at the feet of the Republicans. I mean, there are a few things that Clinton did that I was not all that pleased with. But if you want to talk about people not paying for things, Richard Nixon committed treason in order to win the 1968 election. Ronald Reagan, according to President Bonnie Sauter of Iran, committed treason in 1980 in order to win that election. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, then George W. Bush had to have his brother threw 80,000 African Americans off the voting rolls 3 weeks before the election in 2000, and even at that, he had to get the Supreme Court to make him president. When the recount that was done by the New York Times a year later found that Al Gore actually won Florida. So, you know, Eisenhower was the last Republican president who was legitimately and legally elected in the United States. I suppose you could say George Herbert Walker Bush was, but he wouldn't have been even running if he hadn't been vice president. So,
what you're saying is that, they won't get away with anything they want to do, and they certainly change in this government where anything they wish, they go right ahead and do without even caring about the American people.
I know.
And I kind of disagree with you that they're not destroying us. They are destroying us. They know very well what certain policies that they put in are going to destroy jobs over here. They don't care. And as far as I'm concerned, when you don't care, you're doing it deliberately because, you know, they're doing something that they deliberately want to do, but they don't care about what the ramifications are.
Yeah. Now, I understand your perspective, and I don't disagree with it. I think that to say that they're destroying the United States is a bit strong. What they're doing is they're chipping away at the middle class. Or they're continuing to chip away at the middle class. And if this TPP thing is passed, it's going to be a hell of a lot harder to start a small business in this country, among other things, without looking over your shoulder at some company in Vietnam that wants to sue you. Donald, thank you for the call. Harvey in Berkeley. Hey, Harvey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, it's my belief that the Trans-Pacific Partnership will lead to dramatic growth in crime and prisons for profit. And let me explain that. The purchase of industrial robots in 2014 rose 27% with China and South Korea buying more than 95,000 robots. I guess the money is thinking way ahead of even human labor. And if you put yourself in the employer's position, you have a choice between hiring a human being or leasing a robot. What would you do when you found out that robots work 24 hours a day, 365 days a year without complaint? They require no vacation, no holiday, no days off, no coffee break, and no sleep. They don't ask for raises or retirement benefits. They require no health insurance or medical costs. They don't join unions or want union rights. They don't need food services or bathroom facilities. They don't consume water. They don't create garbage. There's no transportation costs. Robots don't have bad habits or addictions to deal with. There's no theft or inventory loss. Robots don't daydream or get distracted or waste time. No one can work for less than robots. And the only way Americans can compete with the offshore robotic factories is to build our own robotic factories, which means fewer jobs, That'll increase the crime rate. And the Trans-Pacific Partnership, in my belief, will herald in the expansion of the prisons for profit systems. And America, that's America's answer to third world labor. And I believe that it'll mean a lot of working Americans will end up behind bars. It's a new slavery, and it'll put us all in harm's way.
Hmm. I don't see the specific connection between robots and prison, Harvey. I mean, well, I get the robot thing.
Fewer jobs.
Yeah. If you go back to 1965, I think it was, maybe it was 66. It's in my book, The Crash of 2016. Time Magazine did a piece. This was in the mid-60s. They did an article about how productivity was going up so rapidly, in large part as a consequence of robotics at that point in time. This was, you know, the CK-722, the transistor, had just been invented. I mean, we were just at the very, very edge of a really significant technological revolution. But there had been a huge technological revolution from World War II forward in any case. And then, you know, Kennedy was putting a man on the moon, and the NASA was inventing all this stuff, and blah, blah, blah. And so they said, you know, the average work week is probably going to drop to 30, maybe 20 hours a week. But if workers are paid based on the productivity of the business, which historically they have been, then the average income will be over $100,000 a year for a 20-hour week. And sure enough, Harvey, if we were to take the economy right now and go back to the top tax rate that they had back then for the very wealthy people of 74%, and go back to and eliminate the capital gains, eliminate the rule that Reagan put into place, the law that Reagan put into place that said that CEOs and senior executives could be compensated with stock. In other words, they only have to pay capital gains tax too. Eliminate the carried interest option that the banksters use to pay only 15% income tax on their billions that they take. If we were to do that and diminish somewhat the wealth of the billionaires, the working people in this country would be making, well, maybe not 100,000, but they'd certainly be making well over 50 or 60. So, you know, we're back to that. It wasn't even a national debate. It was a national consensus in the 60s that, you know, good times were ahead. Remember the Jetsons? George Jetson used to sit in his chair, and once every 10 minutes he had to push a button. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. I mean, that was how in the 60s we viewed the future. And instead what happened was, you know, all that productivity was used to enrich the very few. I mean, Reagan changed the rules of the game. He changed the tax code. He changed the rules for executive compensation. And CEOs started behaving differently, literally, as a consequence of the 80s. So I'm not afraid of the robots. I think we just need to reorganize our society in a way that recognizes they're there. You know, if people only work a 10-hour work week, or if no problem, if they're well paid. And we certainly have the money to do it in this country, the richest country on earth, at least for the moment. China's creeping up on us. Harvey, thank you for the call. Interesting, interesting, interesting stuff. Chuck in Redondo Beach, California. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hi. Oh, finally. Anyway, when they talk about the IRS scandal, I think it's very partisan, and it's a Karl Rove scandal because he hates Tea Partiers. That's the one they say the most. He doesn't like Democrats. He went after them. And nothing went after Republicans. So when people bring up that scandal.
Well, there is no IRS scandal.
Yeah, the IRS scandal.
There is none. It was entirely manufactured by Fox so-called News.
Well, I think Karl Rove was right in there, because the head of the IRS was a Karl Rove Republican.
Yeah.
And Karl Rove was, I think.
But see, the IRS didn't do anything wrong, Chuck.
Well, no. No, but, they did. They made it look like a scandal.
No. Fox News made it look like a scandal. The IRS didn't do anything wrong. Lois Lerner did nothing wrong. In fact, they weren't, you know, if anything, I would like them to have been more aggressive. You know, they were looking
at... I like the IRS. Yes. I'd like them to do the very thing.
They were both looking at both liberal and conservative organizations. It turns out that they were turning down more liberals than conservatives.
That's the point that I don't like. It's not a conservative organization. The Tea Party was Karl Rove's enemy. So they... And probably Fox didn't like him either. So the So they were going after. There was no harm done to anybody either, Chuck.
There was no harm done to anybody either because under the current IRS laws, once you file your 501c3 status, once you file your nonprofit status, you can begin operating as a nonprofit, and people can give you donations and deduct them from their taxes. It might take a year, 2 years, 3 years for the IRS to get around to saying, "Yep, you're genuinely nonprofit." But if you know that you are, you can operate as a nonprofit from day one, and there was no harm. On the other hand, if you're not behaving like a nonprofit, if you're behaving like a lobbyist or something, then yeah, I want that 501c3 status to be revoked.
I do too, but I agree, no harm was done, right? Except Obama's reputation. And they
that's only on Fox so-called news, because I'm telling you, this whole thing is a phony. It's a phony debate. It's a phony blood. Congress investigated it. There's no there there. This is the kind of wedge issue stuff. This is the kind, you know, like Fast and Furious. This is the kind of wedge issue stuff that Fox News builds up to the point where Fox News viewers, if you say Benghazi, Fast and Furious, IRS, they immediately know what you're talking about. If you say that to the average American who does not watch Fox News on a regular basis, they have no idea what you're talking about, because these are Fox News created, and I shouldn't even call it Fox News. I mean, it's the official voice of the Confederate States of America. It's Fox so-called news.
Karl Rove is big there, right?
Karl Rove is big there, but it's just another scam. I mean, he's part of the hustler class in the Republican Party, and one of the hustles, one of the things that they're using to bring in the rubes, the victims, we've been trying to figure out a word for them, the suckers. Oh my God, look at this. The Democrats are running our government in a way that harms us. Well, no, they're not. Actually, there's no there there. Chuck, thanks for the call. But sorry, not buying it. this is something that only happens in Fox so-called newsland, you know, in the Confederate States. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back. Talk Radio News is going to drop by, and we're going to continue taking your calls. Anything goes Friday. Bernie will be with us in 15 minutes. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Anita in San Antonio. Hey, Anita, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thanks. Chris Matthews yesterday brought up an NBC News poll that unfortunately showed more Democrats than Republicans support free trade. Now, Chris Matthews is pro TPP,
right?
But it wasn't a huge difference, but it was, you know, there were more Democrats, and there was only like 26% of Republicans supported it.
Mm-hmm.
So of course I think that Republican office holders don't care what their, you know, constituents think. I think they just, you know, could care less, because they're not. Basically, they're bought and paid for.
Yeah, they follow the money. However, they are subject to citizen pressure. And if I had a Republican member of the House of Representatives or Republican senator, I would call their office and say, please stop Obama trade.
I don't like the calling it Obama trade. I don't like that at all. I think it's degrading.
I do, too. I would use it with Republicans, though, because it is now the Republican meme. If you go to Obamatrade.com, the Republicans are starting to use this phrase. Mark Levin is calling it Obama trade. You know, some of the other, you know, right-wing talk radio hosts are starting to call it Obama trade. And if that meme gets out in the Republican circles, then the grassroots pressure on the politicians will start to grow. Now, it might not grow as fast as it did with Obamacare, because that had all this money from the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, their front group, and all that kind of stuff behind it. Whereas I'm sure that the Koch brothers are quite happy with the TPP, not having done anything to oppose it. You know, clearly they run a transnational corporation. It's got to be in their interest. But using the word Obamacare with Republican elected representatives and you know, you don't have to disclose that you're a Democrat. You just say, hey, I'm opposed to Obama trade. Excuse me, not Obamacare, Obama trade. And I've been over to this website, Obamatrade.com, and I'm pretty horrified. And I see that a lot of good Republicans are fighting this, like Jeff Sessions. And I think that you should be opposed to Obamatrade, too. That's how I would speak to a Republican.
Well, because Obamatrade relates it to Obama, just
that's
like
correct.
Obamacare. A Republican naturally is against Obamacare because it says Obama.
That's right.
That's why I don't think we should call the Affordable Care Act Obamacare.
Well, oh, except that Obamacare calls it that. The president calls
it. No, he doesn't call it that.
He sure does.
He says, oh, it's okay.
No, he does.
No, he doesn't.
He absolutely does.
What he'll say is, he'll say the Affordable Care Act, oh, you know, what you call Obamacare.
No, he started calling it was almost a year ago prior to his calling it Obamacare. I was calling it the Affordable Care Act on the air because I was saying Obamacare is a Republican slur. And then he came out and he said, you know, I'm going to own this word. I'm very proud of my accomplishment. We've got the clip. We used to have the clip. I don't know if we still have it.
Well,
But
I think he was wrong because we have people in Texas who are dying.
Right.
Because they hear Obamacare and it's related to Obama and
right.
maybe they're, I don't know, they just hate Obama because they're racist or for whatever reason.
Yep.
And people are dying.
I know.
I would rather call it the Affordable Care Act and save these people's lives.
Yeah. Well, it's too late for that, Anita. Obamacare is embedded, but Obama trade is not. And if we, and frankly, the Republic, the only hope to stop this now that we've got 13 Democrats who've caved in the Senate, it appears to me that the main hope to stop this shafter, this Trans-Pacific Partnership, is to get Republicans freaked out about it. And I think calling it Obama trade is a great way to do that, respectfully. Anita, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back. It's time to check in with the Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com, and brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org, and find out what's going on in the world and on the day. And Victoria Jones is with us. And Victoria, I am so looking forward to tonight. You are going to join me as the other progressive in a rumble with two conservatives. It's going to be a hoot.
I'm looking forward to it, Tom. I will do my best to live up to your expectations of me.
It should be a lot of fun. So what's going on? I see you're in the White House today. What's going on?
Well, very interesting today. A former spy, what is he a spy? The former Inspector General for the National Security Agency, Joel Brenner, that was from 2002 to 2006, said in remarkably blunt remarks today that the decision to keep secret the NSA's collection of American calling records was a strategic blunder. Says that it was a huge mistake, said it set the stage for Edward Snowden's unauthorized disclosures. He said, you now live in a glass house, he said in a speech marking the 40th anniversary of the congressional hearings into the intelligence scandals of the Watergate era. How could anyone think the bulk collection program would remain secret?
Yeah.
He said it's not that there cannot be national security secrets, he said, but the idea that the broad rules governing your activities, not specific operations, but the broad rules can be kept secret is a delusion, and they should not be kept secret. He said, if you disagree with me on this, do your own damage assessment, according to text. He said, in the wake of Snowden, our country has lost control of the geopolitical narrative. Our companies have lost more than $100 billion in business and counting. He said, intelligence collection has surely suffered, as has NSA morale.
Wow. This is a cautionary tale, I would say, about the TPP as well. Stop doing things in secret. Start doing them out in front of the people.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah.
Also today, the last wrecked rail cars from the deadly Amtrak accident were removed today as investigators tried to figure out why the train sped up from over 70 miles an hour to 106 miles an hour in the minute before it went into a sharp bend. Brandon Bostian, the engineer who's been crazy about trains since he was a boy, now his handling of the train has emerged as a central element. He has apparently agreed now to talk to federal accident investigators in the coming days. Now, he has said through his lawyer, or at least his lawyer has said, that he doesn't remember anything. He's got 15 staples in his head and a concussion. But he had not been using his cell phone and had not been drinking or using drugs.
Well, that's good.
He does not remember using the emergency brake, but apparently the emergency brake was applied.
Huh. I know that right after I saw the... graphic in either the New York Times or the Washington Post this morning. And
yeah,
right after that curve, the speed does go up to 100 miles an hour, the speed limit.
Yeah.
And or in that neighborhood. So I'm wondering if he thought that he was someplace where he wasn't, if he thought he had just passed the curve when he was accelerating. And then suddenly when he hit the curve, he was like, oh, holy cow, I thought I was on the other side of this, and now I'm just coming into it. Hit the brakes.
If he thought that, I would have thought he would have to be not aware of where he was. There were apparently three sharp curves on that trip. And if you're an experienced engineer, you know where they are. This is somebody who, went, as a child, when he went on vacations, didn't come back with pictures of where he went. He came back with train maps.
Right, right.
He was obsessed with trains.
Yeah.
I think he'd know the route.
Had he done this route a lot?
He knew this route.
Yeah. Well, then.
But we don't know.
This guy's going to be in a world of hurt because he's looking at involuntary manslaughter, you know.
Yeah. We just don't know what happened.
Yeah.
At this point. On the other side of the world, ISIS militants have seized the main government building in Ramadi, the capital of Iraq's largest province of Anbar.
Oh, my.
Now, as many as six suicide car bombs and mortars were used in an assault on a compound. Now, ISIS and Iraqi troops have been battling for months to take control of this strategically important Anbar province. And this is a major defeat for the government. It's really very, very significant. And they are supported by anti-government Sunni tribes and members of former President Saddam Hussein's army in this action. And basically, it's going to give them momentum to control the whole of Anbar, according to analysts. It's a blow for the government because they've been trying to prevent Anbar from falling into the hands of ISIS. And this area starts to border on Syria, and it contains key highways that link Iraq to both Syria and Jordan.
Which all reminds me of the young woman who walked up to Jeb Bush yesterday and said, your brother created ISIS.
Yes, I mean, Ivy, I can't remember her last name. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it's because had George W. Bush simply, you know, done his homework or done, you know, had he not decided to lie us into a war, well, anyway, back to you.
President Obama today called on Americans to honor law enforcement heroes by working harder to heal rifts with communities they serve. He offered his gratitude for the sacrifices of police during an annual memorial service for fallen police on the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol. This is during the Peace Officers Memorial Day, May the 15th. The proclamation was signed by President John F. Kennedy in 1962, and this entire week is Police Week, and every president since George H.W. Bush has spoken at this memorial service.
Wow.
Meantime, a handful of Miami Beach police officers sent hundreds of racially offensive and pornographic emails and possibly jeopardized dozens of criminal cases in which they're witnesses, according to the department's chief.
Oh, no.
They've found about 230 emails demeaning to African Americans and women or pornographic in nature. Many were depictions of crude racial jokes involving President Obama or black celebrities such as golfer Tiger Woods.
Oh my, oh my, Victoria. We need a top to bottom housekeeping of our police departments all over this country. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. She'll be on the Big Picture tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern Time. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
See you tonight. We'll be back. Bernie's coming up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And it's time for Brunch with Bernie, delayed by a couple hours. Maybe it's now Dinner with Bernie, but Senator Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. I know that there's a lot on your table right, or on your plate right now, a lot going on in the Senate and around the country.
There is. Let me start off with an issue that people may not think is too sexy, but is enormously important, and that is trade and that is the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is now being debated in the Senate. Tom, one of the reasons why the middle class in this country has been disappearing for 40 years and why we have 45 million Americans living in poverty and why many of the new jobs that are being created are low-wage and part-time work and why we are seeing a massive shift of wealth from the middle class to the top one-tenth of 1%, a lot of that has to do with trade. And by that I mean trade agreements like NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, and other trade agreements, which have essentially said to corporate America, okay, you can shut down plants, manufacturing facilities in America. And by the way, incredibly, we have lost since 2001 some 60,000 factories in America and millions of good-paying jobs. And I think one of the reasons for that is this disastrous trade approach, which says to these companies, you can shut down these plants, you can move to China, you can move to Mexico, you can hire workers at very, very low wages, and you bring your products back into America. And while it's not the only reason as to why the middle class is disappearing, it is certainly a major reason. So when you look at this Trans-Pacific Partnership, one of the reasons why I am strongly opposed to it and will do everything that I can to slow it down, I don't think we can defeat it in the Senate. I think the fight is going to be in the House, but I'll do everything I can against it, is because of the impact that it's had on American workers. And interestingly enough, I know the president has been running around the country and talking about it, and now he supports it, and I think he's dead wrong on this. But you should know who is for it and who is against it. And it's the same old cast of characters. The people who really want this agreement are virtually every major multinational corporation, you know, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and all the big business organizations. It is the pharmaceutical companies who stand to substantially increase their global profits. It is Wall Street, who will also make a lot more money through the TPP. Those are the people who are for it. And you can learn something by that reality, who is for it. The other reality is who is against it. And the folks who are against it is every union in this country, representing many millions of workers who do understand that these trade policies have been a disaster for the middle class and that we can't continue down the same line. You have virtually every major environmental group in the country, including the League of Conservation Voters, the Sierra Club, the Natural Resources Defense Council, 350.org, and others who understand that this TPP will be bad for the environment. And you have major religious groups like the Presbyterian Church USA and the United Methodist Church, among many others, who oppose this legislation because of what it does to the poorest people on earth. There is another provision in it which needs some discussion. It doesn't get a whole lot of attention. And that is what is called the investor-state dispute settlement system. Have you talked about that much, Tom?
I did. Yesterday, actually, I went through a list of 10 ISDS where the United States has been hurt by these various lawsuits.
Good.
The funeral company, you know the list.
But it's more than, here's what it is, and people have got to appreciate this because this is really heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah.
This is what the Investor-State Dispute Settlement, ISDS, provision is about. And probably it's best to give you some examples internationally. You have a situation where in Uruguay, the small country of Uruguay, the president of that country was an oncologist, a guy who was very concerned about cancer. He led the effort in that country to do everything that they could to prevent the young people from smoking cigarettes. Similar activity took place in Australia. Under the same type of language in previous trade agreements, Philip Morris, one of the large tobacco companies in the world, is suing Uruguay and Australia for the crime of trying to prevent their young people from getting hooked on cigarettes and dying of cancer. And the argument is, which is part of what this legislation is about, is that doing that, protecting the kids of those countries, will reduce expected future profits. In other words, the goal of this legislation, and this really tells you everything you need to know,
is designed to maximize corporate profits. And if countries are trying to protect their kids from tobacco, obviously, you're going to cut sales and hurt profits. And therefore, those companies can go to an international tribunal and say, look, Uruguay is doing terrible things to me. We're losing money. And then the criteria that the tribunal has to deliberate on is, you know, what about expected future profits? That is so crazy that it is beyond belief. I mean, it is undermining democracy and undermining the ability of governments to protect the health and the environment of their people. But it's not just tobacco. You have a company called Vattenfall, which is a Swedish energy company, has used this process to sue Germany for $5 billion. Now, why was Germany sued for $5 billion? Because they made a decision to phase out nuclear power. Now, I think that's a good decision. Other people may agree, may disagree. But one might think that the people of Germany and their elected officials had the right to decide their energy future and not some large corporation who is worried about lost future profits. Third example, you have a French waste management firm suing Egypt, very poor country. Why are they suing Egypt? Because Egypt raised its minimum wage and improved its labor laws. And that will be detrimental to the profits of this company called Veolia. So, I mean, if you step back and you say, this is so crazy, this is a deliberate effort to undermine democratic governance in the sense that if a government sits here and says in Vermont or in Egypt or any place, this is what we think we need to do to represent the best interests of our people, that government could be sued by a large multinational corporation because that government has developed policies which hurt future profits.
It's remarkable.
It is. It's completely undermining democracy. What we expect from our government is to do the right thing by the people. And this provision, Invest the State Dispute Resolution, is about protecting corporate profits. And the last point that I would make of many is that, you know, in the United States, we pay the highest prices in the world because of the power for our prescription drugs, because of the power of the pharmaceutical industry. What is in this agreement also is language which will make it harder for developing countries around the world to move toward generics and lower-priced prescription drugs, which will mean that poor people around the world will certainly die or become much sicker because they can't afford to pay the outrageously high prices that the drug companies want. So, I mean, those are just four reasons, and there are a lot more as to why I'm working hard to defeat this fast-track provision and TPP in its entirety.
Yeah. And yesterday we had 13 Democrats vote to move this forward. Do you expect that trend to continue?
Yes. You have, I think, 46 Democrats, including myself and Angus King, who are independents, in the caucus, and I think you have 12 or 13 who believe in this stuff, and they will work with the Republicans and get it passed. I think we have a better shot in the House.
Yeah. This is where the Obama trade meme is useful. The right-wing websites are starting to refer to it as Obama trade, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on Republicans. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. We'll be right back. And Senator, the website is obamatrade.com for your right-wing friends. We'll be right back with Senator Sanders. Brunch with Bernie, your calls up next.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Brunch with Bernie. Check out Senator Sanders' website, sanders.senate.gov. And welcome back. Jim, in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, watching Free Speech TV, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. I'm a donator, regular donator to your campaign. I really believe in you. One of the questions I had for you was the way Obama is for this trade program, is he really trying to not, you know, support the next Democratic presidential candidate? I mean, if he starts going against this thing, wouldn't the funds dry up for the next, for the Democratic Party in general?
Well, I think, you know, I am disturbed, although not surprised. I mean, Obama has been, you know, made it clear for many years that he supports this. So what I'm seeing now, what you're seeing, is nothing new.
But it is disturbing. And it is disturbing to me, not only in terms of what it will mean in future politics or elections, but that he is opposing very strongly the people who put him in his position. You know, when you're a president, you're a senator, you know, you know, there will be times when you disagree with your base. That happens. But generally speaking, one should be very, what's the word here? You know, one should respect the people who elected you on certain principles. And here you have the trade union movement and millions of people who work really hard to elect him who are saying, Mr. President, this agreement is a disaster. Don't go forward. You have environmental groups who are very supportive of him saying, don't go forward. Religious groups saying the same thing. So I can't, and needless to say, the vast majority of the people in the Democratic caucus, there are 12 or 13 out of 46 who support this, but the rest strongly oppose him in the Senate and even more, higher percentage in the House. So the question that has to be asked is, why is the president turning against all of those folks who helped put him in his office? And I think that's a political mistake, but more importantly, I think it's a public policy mistake. TPP is a bad idea.
Yeah. We have how much time till the break? A minute and 20 seconds. We'll get a quick call in here. James in Silverton, Oregon. Very quick one for Bernie.
Yes, Bernie. I'm on SSDI, and I've been disabled since I was 19. And what they're going to cut for the SSDI 19%. I only get $466 a month after the Part B deduction out of my check.
All right, James, listen, it's right to be very, very nervous. What the Republicans want to do is either cut SSDI or else force us to cut retirement benefits for the elderly on Social Security, and we're going to fight them back. I am not convinced that we're going to lose this fight. I think the American people understand that millions of folks like you are struggling on SSDI. We have elderly people trying to live on $13,000, $14,000 Social Security benefits. We are going to rally the American people and tell the Republicans they're just not going to get away with this. And, you know, we're going to work very, very hard on this.
Yeah, this is I get so many people calling who are concerned about this. If the Republicans set this thing up.
Let's work together to make sure it doesn't happen.
There you go. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall meeting here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your calls for the senator right after this. Past the hour. Welcome back. It's Brunch with Bernie. We're live. It's the third hour of our program. And Khalil in Camden, South Carolina. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator. How are you?
Good.
Good. Okay. I'm a native of North Philadelphia. And as many people have seen on the video, it's a crisscross of old factories. There's a lot of rail lines. Like more than most people would understand unless you're from the area. All right. So there are literally thousands of short train trestles. You can see right to the tracks. All right. Right down to the tracks. I mean, these things were built in the 30s. Cause I mean, when I would take the train to work, you look at the cornerstone and it says 1932, 1934, 1936. Right. All right. So these things are crumbling. You can see the stalactites, you know, the minerals dripping down.
So your question, Khalil?
My question is that why is it the legislators are not making the connection between the government being able to borrow at 0% until the Fed goes up, which they say is probably this summer, all right, borrowing money at 0% to fix these? I mean, that is a no-brainer. If someone said you can get a car right now for 0% so that you can get to your job that's 25 miles away and there's no public transportation. That's a no-brainer.
Thanks.
You're right. It is a no-brainer, and you're absolutely right. And let me tell you what I believe we should do, and I'll tell you where, you know, and I can't explain it, but I will tell you where the Republicans are coming from. What Cleo is saying is that in terms of rail, and we're, you know, maybe focusing on this because of this terrible accident that happened near Philadelphia, which killed, what was it, 7 people, Tom?
Yeah, it's up to 8 now.
So 8 people. Real tragedy. Our infrastructure, that's our roads, our bridges, water systems, wastewater plants, and rail, are in very, very bad shape. There's no one who argues that. The American Society of Civil Engineers, the guys who study these things, say we need over $3 trillion of investment to bring our infrastructure up to par. And I agree with them. That's why a couple of months ago I introduced legislation that would invest $1 trillion in rebuilding our infrastructure. And Khalil, not only will that improve our rail system and our roads and our bridges, it will create up to 13 million decent paying jobs. So when we improve that rail bed that you're talking about in North Philadelphia, you're also not only creating a safer situation, a more productive economy, because trains are going to go faster, you're also creating jobs that we desperately need. So of course we should do that. Now the problem is, and the point that Khalil makes, which is an excellent point, is that interest rates now are very, very low. This is exactly the time that you should be borrowing money and investing in improving infrastructure and education in America. On the other hand, what I have to tell you is that my Republican colleagues, basically for many of them, they don't believe in the concept of government. They do not want to ask the wealthy to pay anything more in taxes. And they are making it almost impossible for us to raise the money that we need to rebuild infrastructure, including the Highway Trust Fund, which is about to run out of money in a couple of months. So we've got a real problem there, but I think Khalil is exactly right.
Phil in Skokie, Illinois. Listen to WCPT. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator, and you too, Tom. My question is when are you going to open up a Chicago office? Because I want to go to work for you to help get you elected as our next president.
Phil, thanks a million, and we will. Right now, three or four weeks ago, I was not sure that I was going to undertake this adventure and run for president. So we have got to now start putting together our organization and our campaign team and our offices, and we're starting out in Iowa and New Hampshire, but we will certainly be in Illinois. We will have staff there and an office, and you'll know about it. We'll get the word to you, and we thank you very much for your willingness to help out.
Kevin, in Santa Fe, New Mexico, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator Sanders and Tom. Good to speak with you. I was on hold since anything goes, and I think what I was going to say will apply to you. I would like to see if you could work it into your campaign platform about how raising the minimum wage, which I know you're for, would positively affect the Social Security.
Right.
And furthermore, I would like to know your thoughts on, as disastrous as they say all of these previous trade agreements are, why do I never hear talk of repealing NAFTA?
Okay. All right, let me start off with Social Security and the point that Kevin makes. And I'll be honest with you, Tom, 6 months ago I hadn't even thought about this. But one of the reasons that Social Security today is solvent and can pay out 100% of all benefits for the next 18 years, only 18 years. So, and I emphasize that because there are a lot of folks out there telling you Social Security is going broke. It is not. $2.6 trillion in the trust fund can pay out all benefits for 18 years, but we want it longer than that. And one of the reasons it is not longer than that, and I think this is the point that Kevin is making, is because wages have been so depressed. We have people who are earning less than they used to, or in fact have not seen a real inflation-adjusted for wage increase in years. That means that Social Security trust fund is getting less money than one had anticipated. So if you were making $40,000 a year and over a five-year period you went up to $50,000, that means you're putting more money into the Social Security Trust Fund. On the other side of the equation is right now the cap is at about $118,000, and you have a lot of people who have gone over the cap. So if you're making $180,000 right now, you're not paying anything more into Social Security Trust Fund than you would if you were making 118. Bottom line is there is less taxable income going into the Social Security Trust Fund than one had previously expected because of the growing income inequality in America. And Kevin's point is quite right. In terms of repealing legislation, we gave very serious thought not to repealing PNTR with China, but going back to, and I will, going back to the situation where they have to get approval every single year.
Cool. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. We'll be right back with your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz. You can read the news of the day. It's a great site. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour in the third hour of our show today. We are live with Senator Sanders taking your calls. And Lynn in Portland, Oregon, listening on X-Ray Radio. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Senator Sanders, recently I was on a flight to New York and sat next to a physicist from Tufts University who was attending a international conference on nuclear non-proliferation. And he gave me a lot of really interesting facts and insight on the subject, one being that the Pentagon or the government is going to be appropriating billions of dollars this year to upgrade our nuclear weaponry in this country, which the professor said would just is disastrous, unnecessary, and crazy. So I was just wondering what your feelings were on the this industrial military complex in this country and what you think about the appropriated funds.
You know, Lynn, I would tell you one of the miracles, if you believe in miracles, I'll tell you one of them. I think, as everybody knows, the United States exploded two nuclear weapons in Japan in 1945. And I think the people who were living at that point, including many in the scientific community, were of the opinion that that type of use of nuclear weapons in war would, you know, continue. The fact that it has not happened for so many years, to me, is unbelievable. I think people back then would not have believed that to be possible. But I think we are, we are extraordinarily lucky that there has not been another war with nuclear weapons. And I think we have got to do everything that we can to end the proliferation of nuclear weapons and to reduce the number of nuclear weapons that are sitting in the United States and around the world. Because the day will come when something awful can happen. So count me in as somebody who believes that we have got to very significantly reduce the amount of nuclear weapons. We have weapons here that can kill people a zillion times over. It makes no sense at all.
Bill, in Clifton, New Jersey, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, hi. Senator Sanders, I was wondering if you would consider doing video town halls in all 50 states for campaigning and giving the Electoral College one less reason to be there.
Well, I don't know about the Electoral College, but we will use video. We have a very strong, we are working right now and already have a pretty strong social media network. We're working with folks at a group called Revolution who did a lot of Obama's social media, and they're doing a good job for us. And the idea of doing town meetings with teleconferencing is something that appeals to me very, very much. So in terms of the campaign, I suspect the day will come probably sooner than later when I will be speaking to people in 50 states around the country simultaneously.
Marie in Carbondale, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, gentlemen. A few weeks ago, President Obama spoke with Chris Matthews, and he was touting the TPP and talking about the future of the United States was to be a service industry nation and a people who are working on technological advancement. And then he said, if you're waiting for the manufacturing base, this is a paraphrase, but if you're
waiting for manufacturing to come back. That ship has sailed. And I thought that's a fine thing to say if you're an A student and know that you're going to get a wonderful education and go on to great paying jobs. But what if you're a C student? What if you've struggled academically? As an educator, I was not only appalled but infuriated. We've already used the military as a way of a job program for C students or for kids who've struggled. I would like to hear what a Sanders administration would do for people who deserve a living wage and a good life.
Well, Marie, thank you. That is a very important question that you're asking. As I mentioned earlier, one of the reasons why the middle class in this country has been disappearing for 40 years and why people are working longer hours for low wages has to do with the loss of millions of good-paying manufacturing jobs. Today, the percentage of manufacturing jobs is substantially less than it used to be. Now, to some degree, that has to do with robotics. You need fewer people to produce stuff, but a lot of it has to do with disastrous trade policy. So, point number one, Marie, I believe in a trade policy which helps us grow manufacturing jobs here in the United States of America, and not just in China. Number two, I think that when we raise the minimum wage to a living wage, you're going to find people able to live in a lot with a lot more dignity than is currently the case right now, trying to get by on $7.25 or $8 or $9 an hour. So the goal here, and what we will certainly focus on, is to figure out how we rebuild our manufacturing base, how we create jobs that pay people a decent wage, how we rebuild the trade union movement so that workers can sit down and negotiate collectively with their employers. There's another idea which we are trying to just advance and work out all the details, is I very much believe in the idea of worker ownership of places in which people are employed. And we do reasonably well here in the state of Vermont. I think Ohio and Vermont are leading the nation. But what we want are policies which say to an employer, if you want to sell your company, why don't you think about selling them to the workers themselves? And here are some tax benefits if you want to move in that direction. Furthermore, Marie, I think we have got to understand, as you just indicated, not everybody is able to go to college, is a good student, or everybody wants to go to college, and that's not the end of the world. There are a whole lot of people, millions and millions of people, who are able to make it into the middle class by working in manufacturing. If you had a union, you paid pretty good wages. And the transformation of the American economy is that General Motors 30 years ago was the largest employer in this country. It has good wages, benefits, and strong unions, and today it is Walmart. Poor wages, poor benefits, anti-union. So what we also have to do is develop training programs for young people to work not only in manufacturing, but to become plumbers and carpenters and do all the kinds of good work that we need and have them earn a decent wage. So bottom line is we've got to focus on creating decent-paying jobs in America. If we purchase products, everything being equal, we should try to manufacture those products in America. If the president said that he thinks there is not much of a future in manufacturing, I strongly disagree with him. Our job is to figure out how we rebuild that base, which is so important to our economy.
Dan, in Marble, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Right down the road from Carbondale and the source of the marble for the Tomb of the Unknowns, a Lincoln Memorial, and all kinds of stuff like
wow.
that.
Wow.
One, thanks for taking my call. First, Mr. Sanders, as a 54-year-old registered independent, I am re-registering as a Democrat to support you in the primaries. And my question is, in light of that one video of the Tea Party guy in Georgia said he'd support Hillary, and the constitutional sheriff that was on your show yesterday saying that he would vote for Bernie over Jeb.
Right, this is Richard Mack, the guy who was at the Bundy Ranch.
Pardon?
This is Sheriff Richard Mack, who was, you know, helping Clive and Bundy. And I mean, he's as conservative as they get. And he said he would support Bernie because Bernie's a straight shooter. Back to you, Dan. I'm sorry. Pardon my interruption.
Oh, no problem. Because of that, Mr. Sanders, do you have an actual strategy to reach out to some of these libertarian?
Yep.
And, you know, the Tea Party started because of being mad at bailing out the banks and, mm-hmm. you know, before they got co-opted. Do you actually have a strategy?
Yeah, we do.
I think your message.
Dan, I mean, we're working on it. I mean, I got, as I mentioned a moment ago, 3 or 4 weeks I wasn't sure I was going to do this thing. And so we're, you know, we're pedaling as hard as we can here to get our organization together and everything else. Here's the strategy. First of all, the strategy is a 50-state strategy. I think that the former governor of the state of Vermont, my fellow Vermonter, Howard Dean, when he was head of the DNC, said it is crazy not to have a 50-state strategy, and he is absolutely right. The idea that the Democrats are essentially abdicating large parts of the United States of America, the South, and the Great Plains, to the Republicans is pretty crazy to my mind. Because the agenda that I have, which says it's time to stand up to the billionaire class, time to take on Wall Street, time to make sure that education is affordable, time to create jobs, time to make sure that everybody in this country has health care. This is an agenda that appeals to the vast majority of the people in this country, I believe. So we are going to mount, to the degree that we can, a 50-state strategy. I've already spent a lot of time in the South. We've had a really good response, and not just from African Americans, but from a lot of white workers as well. But I think, Dan, what we have got to do and what we are doing is we are going to create an agenda that will make sense, I believe, to many of the people in the Tea Party, and especially when the Tea Party folks, working class people, begin to understand who put money to found the Tea Party was the Koch brothers. And we'll take a look at what their agenda is. We'll see how many people in the Tea Party actually agree with that agenda.
We'll be right back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie, right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And check out Sanders.Senate.gov, Bernie's website. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz. It's a great news resource as well. And welcome back. We are live with Senator Sanders here in the third hour of our show. Terry, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good afternoon, Mr. Sanders and Mr. Hartman.
Thank you.
I have a question if you have ever heard the term Demos Kratos. It's Greek. And it's called people power. It's democracy. And I thought maybe you'd want to be able to use that for your run for president, if anybody asks you. And another thing, PBS History, it had a show, The History of Russia. And socialism is becoming such a bad word these days and everything. But on the television show, it said that socialism was presented in 1850 in Russia as a way of protecting the people from the rich and powerful, which sounds like democracy to me. And the way I look at it, crony capitalism and communism in this day and age, they seem to be getting so much closer together. And
that's
like
right. Well, what we have, you know, to a certain degree, Terry, is in this country today we have socialism for the very, very rich, and we have a very rugged capitalistic casino type economy for ordinary people. And I mentioned earlier in the show, I was talking about the TPP, which does so much as a trade agreement to protect Wall Street and the drug companies and the corporate world. And yet, you know, when you look at policies designed to protect working people, they are few and far between, especially right now under the Republican leadership. What does it say that as a nation, members of Congress voted to bail out Wall Street after their greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior helped destroy this country? So we bailed out Wall Street, and most of the banks today are now larger than they were before we bailed them out because they were too big to fail when we bailed them out. And yet you've got millions of people still suffering the consequences of that Wall Street disaster, whom the government pays very little attention to. So if you're a large bank
and you're greedy and you do illegal things, you can be bailed out. Right now, in America, if you're a large multinational corporation, no problem. You can stash your money in the Cayman Islands. You don't have to pay a nickel in federal taxes, no problem. It sounds to me, again, like a government which works overtime for the wealthy and the powerful. I think the entire issue of the campaign that I will be running is to say that I know it's a very radical idea, but maybe the United States government should work for ordinary Americans and not just the billionaires and their lobbyists and the big campaign donors. And that agenda says, yes, if you are very, very wealthy, you're going to have to start paying your fair share of taxes. If you're a large multinational corporation, you're not going to be able to put your money into the Cayman Islands. But on the other hand, if you are a young person who wants to go to college and the family you come from is not very wealthy, you know what? We're going to allow you. We're going to create a situation by which you can go to college and not come out deeply in debt. One of the things, Tom, that we will be announcing, I believe early next week, is legislation which will make tuition-free for public colleges and universities in America.
Wonderful.
Substantially lower interest rates on student debt.
It's like rolling back one of the pillars of Reaganism.
That's right.
Brilliant. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Senator Sanders on the line with us. Roy, driving through Illinois, listening on Sirius. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello, Senator Sanders, and hi, Tom. You are just a champion of the people, Tom Hartman. And, Senator, you are too. Sir, I just wanted to find out, how can I help you become president in Illinois, Peoria, Illinois, sir? When I get home, I can campaign for you, whatever I need to do, Senator. Please let me know how I can help.
Okay, Roy, thank you so much for your support. If you go to BernieSanders.com, and sign up, we will get information to you. We have now something, Tom, like 200,000 people who signed up to be part of the campaign. And as we work through those names state by state, we will have very, very specific ideas and as to what people can do, and we want to hear from people what ideas they have. But just we have to be a little bit patient now because we've got so many names that we just it's going to take us a little bit of time to get back to everybody. But Roy, we look forward to your support, and thank you very much. But BernieSanders.com will give you the opportunity to sign up, and we'll go from there.
Joyce in Chicago, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Joyce?
Oh, hi. Thank you so much, Senator Sanders and Tom. My question is about Fast Track. You know, a long time ago, I heard of the book, When Corporations Rule the World. It was very scary. And I read in Public Citizen that the Fast Track of the TPP provides, instead of Congress setting trade policy, 500 corporations would advise the executive in trade policy. Is that accurate?
Well, I think, by the way, Public Citizen is a wonderful organization, and we work with them very often, and they're playing a great role on this issue as well as many others. If I'm not mistaken, I think what that refers to is in the shaping of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. There is no question but that corporate America and many large corporations and their representatives have played a very, very active role in shaping the legislation. There have been some unions involved in some parts of it. But by and large, I think it is fair to say that this is a document that represents the wishes of corporate America, of Wall Street, and of the drug companies.
Julie in Green Bay, Wisconsin, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
I cannot wait to vote for you, Senator Sanders, for president.
Thank you very much, Julie.
My question is, how do you plan to sway the group that Tom so lovingly describes as suckers to get them to vote Democrat instead of voting Republican just because they're against the social issues like abortion, et cetera?
Boy, oh boy, Julie, that is exactly, you know, that is exactly the issue that we are going to be working on. And it's not easy, but it is exactly what we are going to be trying to do. Look, you have millions of working people who are unable to send their kids to college. They can't afford health care. They can't afford child care. They have seen their jobs go to China. They're scared to death about what happens to them when they retire, because they're not going to have enough money to live in the kind of life that they had hoped that they could live in. And yet they keep voting for folks who want to cut their Social Security, cut their Medicare, make it harder for their kids to go to college, and then send their jobs to China or Vietnam. It is really quite unbelievable. And I think what we will be doing is going to those folks, often white working class people, and saying, look, why are you voting against your own best interest? Fine, you disagree with me on abortion, I am pro-choice. You disagree with me on gay marriage, fine, I believe in gay marriage. I believe in protecting the environment. But even if you don't, why do you vote economically against your own best interest? And what we are going to be doing is building a what we call an agenda for America, an agenda that I believe the vast majority of working people in this country will strongly support. And that means creating millions of jobs by rebuilding our infrastructure and transforming our energy system. It means raising the minimum wage and paid sick leave. It means pay equity for women workers. It means ending our disastrous trade policies like NAFTA, CAFTA, and permanent normal trade relations with China. It means joining the rest of the industrialized world in providing health care to all people. It means learning from countries like Germany and Austria and Denmark, who invest in the education of their young people so that college, or at least tuition in college, is free. I think we're going to pound away at that type of agenda and see if we can wake up some of these folks who, for a variety of reasons, keep voting against their own best interests. And last point I would make is I want to educate some of these folks in the Tea Party about the people who helped fund the creation of the Tea Party, which is the Koch brothers, who believe that we should eliminate Social Security, eliminate Medicare, eliminate Medicaid, eliminate public education in America, give more tax breaks to billionaires. I have the feeling that the more people in the Tea Party learn about those policies, the more I think that they will move toward a progressive agenda.
Yeah, these are the people that I say have been played as suckers.
Yeah, I think that's... Well,
we're trying to find a little less pejorative term.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They have been played to... I mean, why would you be working day and night, or politically, to make the Koch brothers, who are worth $85 billion, even richer while your job goes to China?
Right.
What is that? What sense is that? I don't know. But that is exactly... That's exactly where we're going to be working.
Yeah. We have just 10 seconds, Senator. So.
Okay. Well, I want to thank everybody for their calls today. And it's a busy time in Washington, and we'll be back next week.
Indeed.
To talk about what's going on. Tom,
okay.
Thanks so much.
Senator Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us. It's always an honor and a pleasure. And to the rest of you, to everybody else, democracy's not a spectator sport. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.